WolvesCast, audio on demand.
Welcome into another episode of WolvesCast Audio on Demand. John Folkey alongside Cal Soderquist here on the Timberwolves Entertainment Network. Coming up on this week's episode, conversation with Taj Gibson in his first season in a Timberwolves uniform, what he brings to this team, his relationship with head coach Tom Thibodeau, and what Taj is into away from the basketball court might surprise you a little bit. So invite you to stick around for that. Plus, we'll go three in the key, the top three storylines across the NBA for this week. We'll touch on the Boston Celtics, the Rockets and Warriors, and the Rudy Gobert injury. Of course, we just saw Utah without Gobert on Monday. And Cal, let's start there as we kick things off here. Minnesota snapping a two-game skid with that win Monday over Utah. A couple of things stood out to me. Number one, Minnesota's ball movement. There was a lack of that in Saturday's loss to the Phoenix Suns. Came back, I thought the ball movement was good. I thought that led to open looks from three. We saw Karl Anthony Towns get more involved from beyond the arc. I felt like whether they were running plays for him to get looks from three or not, he found himself open from there a couple different times thanks to some of that good ball movement and went inside out. And, you know, if you can get a good defensive team like Utah, albeit without their best defensive player in Gobert, but if you can get them moving like that and in rotation, it gives guys an opportunity to get good looks from beyond the arc, and Minnesota was able to take advantage.
Yeah, the offense seemed to kind of have a continuity or an identity or even some confidence to it in terms of guys knew where they were going to get some looks. Carl did a great job of getting some shots to drop early inside. You know, he had some nice looks inside, and then he moved his game outside, and I think that's really been a good sign of him building his confidence as the game goes on, and really he was letting it fly as that game went on, and a big reason why the Wolves were able to kind of keep Utah at arm's length for the entirety of that game. So he was incredible. The team as a whole, as you mentioned, hitting the three with efficiency and effectiveness, and it's a sign of it's been the trend. You know, the team has never been worried about their offense. They've always said we can score. Even when they went scoreless in that loss to Phoenix over the weekend for those 4 minutes of the fourth, Tom Thibodeau was more concerned with the defense. He said, hey, even if the shots don't drop for a few stretches, we got to be able to get stops and keep ourselves in the game. So it's good that the offense is something they can still rely on, and hopefully they can build off of that offensive performance specifically from deep in the Utah win.
All right, we talked a little bit about Karl Anthony Towns in that game, became the second player in league history with over 3,000 points and 2,000 rebounds before their 22nd birthday. Dwight Howard was the other, and we should mention, happy birthday, Karl Anthony Towns, number 22, coming up on Wednesday. You mentioned the defense in the second half of that Golden State game. Defense was really the main theme there, and, you know, obviously Golden State can light up anybody. They can light up the best defensive teams. But when you look at Phoenix, a team that's you know, not necessarily the offensive juggernaut that the Golden State Warriors were, I think that shows that Minnesota's still got a long way to go on that defensive end. Obviously, Devin Booker is a very talented scorer, so seeing him get 35 is one thing, but seeing T.J. Warren get 35 and seeing, you know, Phoenix knock down 10 threes and shoot over 50%, those are numbers that Minnesota's got to start bringing down if they want to win consistently throughout the course of this season. And whether it's opponent field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage, true shooting, whatever, you know, all those numbers, I think Minnesota does some good things defensively, you know, especially defending without fouling. I think they're a good rebounding team, but they've got to end those defensive possessions with defensive rebounds. I think that'll help their transition game. But, you know, you just go back to that Phoenix game and say there's still a long way to go on the defensive end with this team.
And how many times have we heard Tom Thibodeau say, you know, there are no shortcuts. You can't cut corners, especially on defense. And I think after that game Saturday, it was Taj Gibson who said at times, you know, that the closeouts weren't what they needed to be. And you mentioned 35 apiece from both Booker and Warren. I think combined, they shot like 30 of 43 from the field. So it was an efficient way for them to score in bunches. And that's partially because the defense, you know, wasn't as intense as it needed to be down the stretch and in that whole second half. The other thing, and it's an offensive thing, but it helps your defense, is taking care of the basketball because I think the live ball turnover numbers, in terms of when the Wolves suffer a live ball turnover, they're giving up one of the higher points per possession numbers in the NBA, and that hurts your defense as well, because we've talked about it. It's more chaotic to try to get back in transition and defend and stop your opponents. So Those are things. I think the eye opener was Saturday's loss to Phoenix. I think any team can end up looking silly, like the Warriors made Minnesota look in that second half last week. But hopefully Saturday's loss opened up some eyes, because the Wolves played well enough to win that game for three and a half quarters, but that fourth quarter kind of jumped up on them. And at least if you look at Monday's response in Utah, it's what you want to see from a team that got humbled a little bit on Saturday.
Yeah, 14-0 run for Phoenix in that fourth quarter on Saturday. Then in the fourth quarter against Utah, Jazz opened with a little run. They got cooking from beyond the arc. Tibbs quickly went back to his starters. I think he brought that whole starting five in with about 7.5 minutes to go. They were able to stop that run and finally close that game out. And a game that, you know, maybe wasn't as close as the final score indicated, but Utah made a game of it in the fourth quarter. So it was good to see the Wolves go back to their starters, close that game out. Ultimately, when you build a lead like Minnesota did, you'd love for the bench to be able to close things out in that fourth quarter. But I think that was Tibbs just sending a message that, hey, we've got to stop this skid, and I'm going to put my starting five back in there to get it done. Speaking of stopping the skid, I think it was an important win against Utah on Monday to end that two-game losing streak. Minnesota had a two-game losing streak a couple of weeks ago with Detroit and Indiana back-to-back losses, but you don't want to find yourself, especially with how good this Western Conference is, mired in a six-game slump or something like that, and just seeing other teams start to pull away, especially as we get deeper into the season, Cal, when Oklahoma City's going to start hitting their stride. Maybe the Clippers start to figure it out. And so you don't want to find yourself in a six-game slide or longer when those teams start to get going and all of a sudden you're in this huge hole trying to climb your way back out.
Well, especially even looking ahead at some of the games Minnesota's going to play here. I think Monday kicked off a stretch of 5 games in 7 days, and there are some playoff-caliber teams on that stretch, and some not. They go to Dallas on Friday, but the Detroit Pistons are playing well. The Charlotte Hornets are always tough, so you're right. You don't want to let these things snowball. I think also that's where teams start to hang their heads a little bit, is if they get caught up in one of those lengthy slumps. So that's what, you know, going back to having some of these veterans on this team that kind of know, all right, this needs to stop here. Whatever it takes, we're going to get this win. Utah's a tough place to play, even if they're missing a guy like Rudy Gobert. And it was good to see the Wolves jump on Utah early and really leave no doubt in those first 3.5 quarters. Like you said, Jazz made a game of it down the stretch, but Minnesota never really had to sweat too much in terms of Utah rallying to get close.
It's a lot better to win a game like that when you're playing from ahead. It's a lot easier to do so when you're playing from ahead. All right, you mentioned some veterans. Want to bring up Taj Gibson. Watching that game last night and really over the last couple of weeks, just seeing how Taj has fit into this lineup, he, to me, Cal, has been one of the most impressive guys of just how quickly he's acclimated himself, how important he is for Minnesota in such a number of areas. Number one, just finding soft spots in the defense. And when a double comes at Jimmy or a double comes at Teague or Carl, diving to the basket, you know, being that release valve and scoring, whether it's a baseline jump or little push shots in the paint, you know, never really going outside of himself and even uncorking a three every once in a while just to keep defenses honest. And then what he does on the defensive end, competing on every possession, switching off on smaller guys out in the perimeter. He's always in good position to rebound the basketball. Great job getting his body between the basket and his man to get those rebounds and just setting great screens, rolling. I mean, there was a play against Utah that really stood out to me, and it was Carl had it at the top of the key. Taj came to set a screen, although it was kind of a decoy screen. They swung it over to Butler on the wing. Taj dove to the basket super hard that he drew his man and Carl's guy, had to stutter step down there a little bit because Taj, you know, was so wide open for a moment. Butler faked the pass to him, up top cat, wide open for a straightaway three. And now Taj isn't going to get any sort of, you know, credit for that play. He's not going to get an assist. Yeah, but that, without his decisiveness on that play and without cutting so hard and setting that initial screen or slipping the screen, that play would not have opened things up for Carl. And I think, you know, it's moments like that that when you really get to look at him and kind of step back, you say, he is a huge part of this team and brings a lot in that regard that you might not see in terms of when you look at the box score or even advanced stats.
It's a great example of cutting with purpose, even when you probably know in your head, I'm not the primary option. Mm-hmm. I might not get the ball on this play. And I think we're seeing Taj, a guy who's really confident in this Tom Thibodeau system, obviously defensively. And you mentioned offensively, I think he's kind of exceeded all of our expectations thus far. He's been able to knock down some triples at times. He's been really efficient just with his shots. You mentioned kind of picking and choosing, you know, when the defense shifts a double team to Jimmy or Wig on the perimeter, and Taj is there to make them pay. And I think he's been a consistent rebounder. He's been just a voice and a presence, I think, that's been sort of a calming and steadying. You know, he had some great comments after the Warriors' loss about, we're not going to get too down on ourselves. It's a learning experience. Yes, we got humbled, but we can get back to the drawing board and keep going. And you know, those are guys who obviously have been in those battles, and they've handled playoff series. They've handled losing stretches, winning stretches, and he's a great guy to have. You know, we talk so much about Jimmy Butler coming in and being kind of a voice who can echo what the coaching staff will say. Taj can do the same thing. Taj can even kind of reinforce what Jimmy wants to get done too. So it was a really, you know, for all the fanfare and hoopla of bringing in Jimmy Butler, I think the Taj signing so far, when you look at what he's done on both ends of the floor, it's been just as impressive.
All right, speaking of Taj, we're going to have a conversation with him coming up in just a few moments in segment two, and then we'll wrap things up by going three in the key, the top three storylines across the NBA. Taj Gibson conversation next right here on Wolvescast Audio On Demand.
Experience the pack like never before with the all-new official mobile app of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Whether you're at home, at Target Center watching the game, or anywhere around the globe, the app is your remote control for all things Timberwolves. Head over to the App Store or Google Play to download it now. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north.
Welcome back to Wolvescast Audio On Demand. Coming up, Cal Soderquist will rejoin me on the other side of the break. We'll go three in the key, our top three storylines here for week five in the NBA. But first, want to check in with a guy that we were just talking about, Taj Gibson. We'll get to know Taj's game a little bit, his relationship with Coach Tibbs, and what Taj is into off the court. It's right here in our weekly spotlight.
Taj, how would you describe your style of play?
I like to get out and run. I just like an athletic kind of game, like just hoop, free play. But I can get down to the nitty gritty too. Defensive kind of game. I'm lucky. I'm just lucky to be able to adjust to the games, especially being on the West Coast.
The versatility to your game, how much does that maybe benefit you in the way that the NBA has evolved since you've come into the league?
It's great for me because when I first came into the NBA, bigs were really about almost twice my size as far as weight-wise. They were ranging 260, 270. It was more of a physical pound kind of game. Now it's get out and run, athletic kind of game, lobs, stretch the floor, shoot threes. So just happen to be able to adjust, and just, I'm lucky I'm kind of skinny.
What do you like about the defensive side of the game?
Because now you're playing a lot of small ball. You got to be able to guard multiple positions. You might have your normal, typical four man play five now, and everybody else is a wing or a shooting guard or a point guard. So you have to be able to move your feet, and I'm lucky enough to be able to do that.
Second go round with Coach Tibbs.
Yeah.
What is it about him that drew you here to Minnesota?
He's a good coach, real good coach. I had really good chemistry with him. He was the coach I had my first couple years in the NBA, so he really just molded me into the player I am today. Helped me a lot, my footwork, my offensive game, everything. And I just liked him as a coach and a person off the court, and he really helped me mature early.
One of the words we hear associated with Coach Tibbs is passionate. Mm-hmm. Do you see that out of him, and how does that maybe matriculate through the lineup and to yourself?
Yeah, that kind of was one of the main reasons that made me want to come here, because he's real passionate, and when you play for him, you really think like you're going to play for a purpose. Like you have a purpose every day you go in the gym. He's constantly talking to you. He's constantly preaching team, preaching the right things. And It was big for me, because just when he left, I kind of lost that mindset in a way of having a new coach that's trained. The way the NBA is so up and down, with this guy's worrying about numbers and worrying about wins and losses, but he really just plays for the right purpose.
middle of last season, you get traded away. Well, you'd been in Chicago for a number of years. That's where your career started. What was that like, finding out that news and then trying to adjust to a new city on the fly?
It was strange. I kind of felt weird. I didn't want to, I could say it was bad, but it wasn't really bad because I had a ton of good memories and Chicago always be a home to me. But it's just adjusting to a new team, new city, new everything, and new style of play, especially getting adjusted to new colors of jerseys on the West Coast. I felt weird. I felt like I was a rookie again.
Well, now you got to adjust to all new uniforms. Mm-hmm. Every team across the league. What do you think of these new look Minnesota Timberwolves uniforms?
Yeah, I like the colors. I like the blue. I always had a fond likeness for the Wolves ever since I was little. Before, even when they had KG, Sam Cassell, I always looked at the Wolves. Even when Coach Fred, he was assistant GM here. Mm-hmm. I always talked to them. So. It's just funny I end up here.
What did you like about those Wolves teams?
They were just tough. They were hard-nosed, trash-talking, but they backed it up. But at the same time, they had fun. They loved each other. You can tell they were great teammates on and off the court. And plus, I remember Stephon Marbury was here. I was a big T-Wolves fan just because of Stephon Marbury from New York and then KG. Those are the guys I looked up to.
Hoping to bring that back here to the Twin Cities?
Oh, without a doubt. Just blood, sweat, and tears, and doing whatever it takes to get wins and help the city grow.
Away from the court, how do you spend your time?
Just constantly watching film. I've grown so much from when I first came into the NBA. Now I'm watching film. Now I'm understanding play calls, understanding personnel, because this is your job. You have to be passionate about it. And just being with a coaching staff like this, it just helps me even more because the attention to detail that they present for you, but at the same time, they let you be yourself and let you be a player and attack the game.
Basketball all the time? No fun stuff for Taj Gibson?
Oh, I do a lot of fun stuff. I have a lot of dogs. I have like three dogs. I play a number of video games. I go to movies. I collect different, like, I'm into cars. Muscle cars, old school cars. I'm all around. I like everything. Artwork. I live in a building downtown where it's a museum, so I love everything.
All right, it's the perfect 70 degree sunny day, not a cloud in the sky. Which muscle car are you taking out for a ride?
Something about those Chargers, those 69 Chargers. I love them. Those Chargers, man. Mm-hmm. Something about Chargers. I just always have a fond likeness to it. But now, I don't know. That's tough. I'll say a Charger. I'll say a 68 Charger.
Do you work on the cars yourself?
Sometimes. I'm really getting into mechanic work now. I was just doing it this summer, as far as just because when I first got to the NBA, I didn't really know how to drive. So it's just funny the turnaround time. And now I'm just watching constant shows of just mechanics and automobiles, so I'm really into cars.
All right, growing up, family traditions around the holidays. Did you have any?
We always basically just got together, watched football games. That's the main thing we mostly did. We were really big on watching football games, trash talking, being around each other, and having Junior's New York cheesecake at the table. That's the one thing we always did have.
If you weren't hooping, would you play football?
No way. It's too tough. It's a great sport, but I don't think I could do it.
What would you play?
Let me take that back. I would try wide out, but I don't know. The you really have to be a good track star. You really have to just be mindful of taking hits. Like, you really have to want to take hits sometimes. Like, football players prepare way differently. I don't know.
Awesome stuff, Taj. Thanks so much.
No problem.
Great stuff from Taj Gibson. Awesome to have him a member of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and fun to think that he grew up rooting for the Wolves, all thanks to that Stephon Marbury-Brooklyn connection. All right, still to come, Cal Soderquist rejoins me. We go three in the key next on Wolvescast Audio On Demand.
Gather the crew and enjoy some fun this season at Target Center with a friends and family four-pack. Get four discounted tickets plus access to shoot a free throw on the court after the game. To purchase your four-pack, visit Timberwolves.com/family. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north.
All right, back here on Wolvescast Audio On Demand, John Fokey alongside Cal Soderquist. We wrap things up by going three in the key, our top three storylines here in whatever week number it is of the NBA season. I've already lost count. Let's start, Cal, in the Eastern Conference. Boston has won 12 straight games. They've done so without one of their biggest free agent acquisitions in Gordon Hayward. Brad Stevens, early candidate for Coach of the Year. I think for me, there's no question that this guy right now is a front runner.
I think so. I mean, even missing Kyrie Irving for a couple games too with the facial injury, but Stevens, he's done a great job of asking more of those young guys. I think we talked about it a week or two ago that with the Hayward injury, they were going to need more of some of those young wing players, rookie Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum is the rookie. Brown is the second-year guy, and both those guys were going to have to step up, and I think they've all kind of answered the call, and it speaks to Stevens' ability as a motivator. And then also as a coach, you got to put your guys in the right spots to succeed. Don't ask them to do too much. Put on their plate what they can handle and then give them a little bit more at a time. That's what we used to hear from Flip Saunders all the time. So it's been impressive. I haven't necessarily looked around the league to see some of the other resumes or candidacies for some of the other coaches, but he's got to be right up there.
Well, it is still early. There's a lot of basketball left to be played. But, you know, you could look at, again, Mike D'Antoni, who won Coach of the Year last year. Even without Chris Paul, he's gotten the Houston Rockets off to a great start. But what always stands out to me about a Brad Stevens team is the sum is greater than the parts a lot of the time. He just finds ways to draw the best out of these guys. And whether it's motivation, you know, in the locker room, things that we can't see, or whether it's schemes, putting them in a position where, you know, you do this and you do it as hard as you can and as well as you can, and that's going to help everything else. And so I think over the years, I mean, what he did with that team a season ago with Isaiah Thomas, obviously playing out of his mind, but also using Kelly Olynyk and Jay Crowder and those guys and just building a system and a scheme that put them in a position to really excel at their strengths, that raised the level of play for everybody else. And, you know, if nothing else, I think Stevens should get credit, at least some credit in terms of Coach of the Year for Kyrie Irving's defense. Kyrie's been much more engaged on the defensive end this season, and the numbers bear that out, and he's been a big part of what this team has done, obviously on both ends of the floor. So long way to go in terms of some of those postseason awards, but I think early on you've got to be impressed with the job that Brad Stevens has done holding things together there for the Boston Celtics. Now, interesting to see Boston get off to this great start, and you think about Cleveland scuffling a little bit, but we know the Cavs can get going at any time, and they want to be playing their best basketball at the end of the season. You almost wonder, Cal, and it's early, but is Boston kind of going all in early? Are they going to
be peaking too soon?
Yeah, are they going to be gassed? I mean, you would hope that you're not peaking in early, you know, to mid-November, but certainly I think it's something to keep an eye on to see how long they can keep their foot on the gas and keep playing at such a high level.
You know, I think as a team, they would say we still have better basketball ahead of us, but this is kind of their response to everyone wanting to put a fork in them after that Hayward injury, I think. So this has been fun. It's one of the better winning streaks in franchise history, I think, for them already. And it's been really impressive to see, like we said, the guys that have stepped up and sort of the way guys have transformed themselves to be able to help the better of the team. But I also think that it's not sustainable in the, you know, they're not going to win 12 out of every 15 the rest of the way. But we still could see these guys continue to redefine themselves. I would think Jason Tatum is a guy who's going to be better in March than he is right now. You know, that's the case with a lot of rookies.
Provided he doesn't run into that rookie wall.
True.
I don't think they anticipated him, you know, playing as big a role as he's playing right now. And down the stretch, you know, maybe he does get a little gassed. It's certainly possible. But like Karl Anthony Towns never really hit a rookie wall. You know, some of these guys, it's just it's a mental thing, and probably when you're winning, like Boston is
that
going
helps.
To, yeah, it certainly helps.
Or even a guy like Kyrie Irving, can he continue to be such a large chunk of their offense? But I think they'll continue, you know, once they hit a little bit of a wall, it'll be Brad Stevens who is the guy you trust to kind of redefine things and get things back on track.
All right, so that is topic number one here in Three in the Key, the top three storylines this week in the NBA. We'll shift over to the Western Conference. Warriors and Rockets are both rolling. Right now they're tied atop the Western Conference, six-game winning streak for the Warriors, seven for the Rockets, and there's word that Chris Paul might be returning for Houston. Already they're playing at an incredibly high level. Getting Chris Paul back, does that allow Houston to pull away, or are we going to see them kind of come back to earth as they try to acclimate to Chris Paul and his style of play?
I think it's almost you're sacrificing the short term for the long term good, right? Because there could be some bumps working Chris Paul into this team. Basically, what we're seeing without CP3 early on is an even more efficient version of this Houston team last year. James Harden impacting the game in so many ways in terms of either the threes he's getting or the threes he's setting up. And really, they're just hitting on all cylinders. Now, you bring Chris Paul into that mix, and you may stumble a little bit temporarily, but it's with June in mind. It's with that long-term goal of being a better overall team to compete with the Warriors down the stretch in May and June. And I think it'll be really fascinating to see how quickly kind of CP3 adapts to what they're doing or how they tweak the system to get him more comfortable. But I think they will have some of those short-term struggles, but it'll all be for the larger benefit.
Should mention, too, Houston getting solid defensive efforts out of P.J. Tucker and Luke Richard and Bamute, who, of course, had some time in a Minnesota Timberwolves uniform. So when you've got those guys to go along with your uber-efficient offense and you're about to bring back one of the best point guards in the league, it'll be interesting to see what Houston looks like a month to 2 months from now when they do get everybody on the same page. We'll wrap up this week's Three in the Key segment with the Rudy Gobert injury. Of course, we just saw Utah without Gobert on Monday. He went down with the bruised tibia after Deion Waiters ran into him during their game. Little war of words going back and forth between those two. I don't know about you. I watched the replay a bunch of different times, a bunch of different angles. It's very hard to say whether or not it was intentional, it was a dirty play. I mean, it's just, you know, when we watch it back in slow motion and everything, you can take it all these different ways. But at the end of the day, what it sets up is Gobert's going to be out for about a month. And Utah, I thought, was a fringe playoff team. And honestly, I didn't think they were going to get in this year. But we've seen Quinn Snyder able to motivate his guys and put together schemes to really raise them up. And so now without Gobert, does it sink Utah's playoff hopes?
I think if it doesn't, it's because they really sort of redefine the way they're going to play. I think we've seen Ricky Rubio kind of struggle under this current system. His scoring average is at a career high, but his assists are down. And Alan Horton mentioned it in our broadcast last night that they're not putting him in some of the best positions for, mm-hmm. for him to really succeed or to maximize his skill set. He's being forced to take a lot of shots, and I think they're going to want to ramp the pace up a little bit, especially with Gobert out, and maybe you ask more of Derek Favors, a guy who can get up and run a little bit and score the ball too. So it'll be interesting to see, because you're right. They're off to a slow start, like several Western Conference teams that are kind of working in new pieces. You think of the Oklahoma City Thunder, but they're going to miss him. He's a big part of what they do defensively. Quinn Snyder talked about how guys on the perimeter kind of know they have that safety valve back there, and you have to adjust that mindset in terms of gambling for steals. So I don't know. I think with the way the West sort of shakes up right now, and you look at everyone else who you could pencil into the playoff position, it's going to be tough for Utah. They're going to have a steep sort of hill to climb.
Well, I think it goes back to what we talked about in the first segment, that if you go into a little skid or tailspin early in the season and these other teams start to pull away, it's going to be very difficult to climb back out. And with Gobert out for a month, I mean, so much of what they do defensively is all geared around funneling everything to Gobert and allowing him to impact shots and impact things on the defensive end, and then go back the other way and execute. And they use him as a screener and a roller. He's so good around the basket that he plays a huge role on both ends of the floor. And so if Utah does struggle without him for a month, by the time they get him back and then get him, you know, back to game speed and everything, it could be 6 weeks, if not more, and all of a sudden you're going to be looking up in the Western Conference standings and saying,
you're done.
Yeah, yeah. We got a long way to go. So unfortunate timing for that injury. Unfortunate to see anybody injured, but especially Gobert with how much he means to the Utah Jazz. And, hey, how about Minnesota? 4-0 against the division so far. It's been a long time since they've won five straight against their division, but 4-0 start to the division, pretty darn good for Minnesota, especially when you think down at the end of the line when you're talking about tiebreakers and things like that. Having a good record against your division and having those tiebreakers in your back pocket could be huge for Minnesota. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Wolvescast Audio On Demand. For Cal Soderquist, I'm John Foakey. Be sure to check us out on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, and, of course, Timberwolves.com. We'll talk to you again next week right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.